That's the reason I started talking about it before you started recording. I was like, let's talk about this issue. We're going to resolve the issue and we're going to start the podcast as if the issue never existed. Now you fucked everything up.
Sometimes it's good to be spontaneous with our listeners and confess that we have no idea what to talk about because the episode kind of...
In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis, and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
The episode was a bit of a downer.
The episode is shit. Something really sad happened in the real world also. So it's everything is a bit harder today than it is usually. Thankfully, one of the things that I have done when I was doing the initial prep for this podcast, when we first launched it, was I created a special document for banter ideas.
Nice. Let's see it.
Okay. So I think what we can talk about is the fact that clearly Xena is an iconic gay, queer, lesbian show, but it has a lot of quote unquote hetero elements, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe we can talk about how we see them, like what is our take on that? Do we see them rather as a result of pressure to make the show more palatable to the straights? Do we see it as by representation, something else?
Yeah, I think that it's a tangled mess in terms of one side of the story is like what they meant to do when they just set off to do the show. Another side is like what they ended up doing, and like the more they filmed, the more I would assume they kind of listened to the fans, because it also was the time where the internet kind of came to influence the making of the shows. So I think further down the line in later seasons, there's not so many heterosexual elements because it was more or less clear how the fans see the show and the direction that they want to go in. But yeah, the season one, and I would assume like season two, I think also, there are a lot of elements of that. But like just purely from how it is perceived in the story by me right now, I already said that I think Xena definitely is representing bisexuals in a way. Because she has a lot of love interests, actually male and female, in her past, like before Gabrielle. And for the most part, they're believable. Some of them less, some of them more.
And believable just... doesn't mean enjoyable.
Yeah. So for me, I kind of see it as Xena being bi. And with Gabrielle, again, I would stand on this ground that I see her more as gay, and the heterosexual relationships that we see are more like she's trying to deny that side of her, or she don't discover that side of her yet, because every time we see her in quote unquote like heterosexual interest, it's either this absolutely hopeless asshole of a fiance that she left, and like good for her that she left him because there's like zero chemistry there, or it's those like little love stories sprinkled in the earlier seasons, like with the dead guy that you hated in Death and Chains, because it's a beautiful story, but also it could be just she loves the story herself and she grew up on those romantic experiences that are heterosexual, and she wants that kind of story for herself, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it, I think. Because she certainly, at least, I think we've mentioned that a couple of episodes ago, she has this tendency to just kind of go along with a heterosexuality when it starts interacting with her. And she's like, oh yes, this thing, I'm supposed to do this thing, right? Yeah, sure, yeah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very good point, that, you know, generally she's very story driven, not as a character, but like as a person. She seems to perceive the world through this prism of storytelling, and maybe, yeah, as it is for some of us, it's hard to shake off this narrative that you've been brought up with, that, you know, heterosexuality is an integral part of any meaningful story, and once that is taken out of the equation, you feel a bit lost, and it takes you a while to create your own story, which,
yeah,
thankfully most of us do manage to do, and so does Gabrielle, but takes a while.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it has something to do with the subtext, and that the show could not be completely open, but also, again, if we're just purely from the story standpoint, they keep calling each other friends till the very end, I think. But in the later seasons, we completely understand that the meaning of this word changed for Gabrielle.
Right. And also, so both in Xena generally, the word friend is used very widely. When Marcus first dies and Xena is mourning him, she just keeps repeating, he was my friend, he was my friend.
Yeah.
Which, like, clearly that's not exactly what she means.
Salmonius, right? Salmonius was in one of the episodes, he was like, oh, she's your friend. Oh, okay. Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely that. But also, so I think that kind of ties into the second part, which is the fact that Xena as a show existed in a time where literal and openly stated queer representation in the mainstream was not really an option. And generally, like, in the wider society, I think a lot of real life people had friends
that they just happened to live with and hang out with all the time.
Yeah. You know, roommates and all of that. So I think in part that word, this kind of euphemistic way of referring to your partner, comes from that. I recently watched and then rewatched Fellow Travelers, which is a miniseries that covers the relationship of two people from early 50s to mid 80s. And there also the word friend plays a very flexible role. So, I don't remember why we started talking about this, but you said that, like, until the end, that's how Xena and Gabrielle refer to each other, and I think like in that context, it makes sense.
It makes sense, and it represents the world. I think it's a good point. But speaking of,
sadly, taking a nice deep sigh before we go into this delightful episode.
Dive into heterosexuality head first. Brace yourselves.
Ew. Yeah, okay. Well, we can't keep putting it off. It must happen. There we go. Episode 16, Mortal Beloved.
Oh, we did not say our names.
Oh yes, that's true. We were so discombobulated by the horrors of having to talk about a straight episode that we forgot our own identities.
Oh yeah,
that's what heterosexuality does to you, kids. It erases who you are.
Let's remember them. I'm Alice, and I'm definitely queer.
And I'm Chris, also 100% gay. and you're listening to, appropriately, Xena Made Me Gay.
Yay!
Phew. That was a close one. No, it wasn't. So let's talk about the episode. Episode 16, Mortal Beloved, which I found out was a reference to a 90s movie called Immortal Beloved, which nobody saw from... Okay.
From what from the two understand. People making this podcast.
Yes. Authoritatively, we can claim no one has seen this movie. If you've seen this movie, please write to us and tell us that we're wrong, because that's what the internet is for. Yes. So we open with a shot of this really silly looking kind of softcore erotic milkmaid. walking through the dark forest at night.
As they do,
of course. So she hears someone whisper, "Help me." And it seems to be some kind of an apparition or a ghost. And the softcore milkmaid screams and runs to her village tavern, where indeed she tells everyone that she saw a ghost. And ta-da, Xena happens to be in that tavern. So she tells Gabrielle to stay put while she goes and checks out this cool new ghost. So she chugs the rest of her drink and sets out. And it's when I say this sounds super casual and normal, but the way that she does this, she does it with just so much dyke-y swagger, this chugging of the drink and going out of the tavern. It's just incredibly hot. I remember watching that part, I was like, oh, I need to keep taking notes and I can't get carried away here.
Aww. It is hot in this scene. She's like, I'm gonna take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, like that sort of energy. But I also really like how when she says to Gabrielle, you stay here, and Gabby's like, no problem. It's like, I have no desire to go and look at the ghost. Like, I'll stay here. It's fine.
Yeah. So in the woods, Xena starts talking to the ghost and quickly realizes that it's Marcus, her love interest from episode 5, The Path Not Taken, the one that she kept referring to as her friend, as we mentioned earlier. And he's like, hi Xena, I'm a ghost. I love that there's at no point is there like any real ambiguity when it comes to like what is happening. The milkmaid sees the ghost and she's like, oh, it's a ghost, and the way that it's shot, it looks kind of like a ghost. And then she comes to the tavern and she's like, I saw a ghost. And then Xena goes to the ghost and the ghost is like, hi, I'm a ghost. Just really straight forward. Marcus is like, hi, Xena, I'm a ghost. And I need help because there's trouble in the underworld. And then we see some shapes, people, ghosts, grabbing Marcus and dragging him away. Xena tries swinging her sword at them, but of course it doesn't help because, you know, they're ghosts. But Marcus does manage to tell her before he disappears that Xena can go to some lake and that's how she can help him.
Cool. Not much to add here from my side, only the fact that Xena seems to have a more prominent smoky eye in the scene. You noticed that also, right?
For sure.
And like, either it's a new makeup artist on set, or they just want to lean hard into the fact that it's like this noir gothic ghost novel story.
Yeah. I tend to think of noir as more crime.
Yeah, but I think that femme fatale. Stories like femme fatale. She always has some sort of prominent eye makeup, a darker one than like the good girls out there. So I think Xena had something like that on her face.
Yeah,
Maybe a little bit, yeah. Okay. I mean, we've warned you already many times, but I hope everyone is wearing your security belts, because this is another heterosexuality episode, and there's going to be some turbulence.
Oh, yeah.
So, at the lake, Gabrielle is trying to convince Xena not to do a heterosexuality. not to dive to the bottom of the spookily deep lake, because she might die. And Xena's like, wait, is heterosexuality not supposed to make you die? Anyway, I don't care, lol, because a man I love asked me to help some good souls. Jesus, girl. A man I love? Like, obviously there was some cute sexual tension between you two, but this is not it. Like, it's just so sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of us, but also Gabrielle, is visibly disappointed by all of this bullshit.
Yeah.
But she tells Xena she'll wait for her.
Yeah, the man I love also threw me. Like, where did it come from?
What the
hell? Okay. I don't know. I don't have any reasonable explanation. About the good souls. The thing about the good souls really reminds me of Christianity creeping in the ancient Greek mythology, which makes sense because heterosexuality and Christianity often go together. But they more do. On that later.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, I mean, no, it's very fair. Like, now that I think about everything that we see about the afterlife, it's extremely Christian. I guess you're gonna talk about it later.
Yeah.
So, anyways, Xena gets to the underworld and sees a guy wearing really, really bad kind of old spooky mythical man full face mask, like made out of rubber or something. And this guy's in a boat. The mask looks cheap and dumb and unnecessary. But while researching this episode, I found out that this is incorrect. It's absolutely necessary. While also being cheap and dumb. because Karen, who this person is Karen, Karen is played by Michael Hurst, who portrays Iolas. I don't know why, but this was kind of his side gig for some reason. he had this recurring role as Karen.
That's interesting. Now that you say it, I can definitely see it. Like, the features are very familiar, despite the dumb mask. But also I could kind of see why he would want to play Karen, because Karen is arguably the best thing in this episode.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. So Xena walks up to him and is like, "You must be Karen." And he's like, "No, I'm Tallulah, the dancing girl." Who is Tallulah? I don't know. Yeah, generally, Karen is cranky as hell. pun sorta intended.
Good one.
Thank you, thank you. And between complaining to Xena and mocking her, he tells her that currently all of the baddies are in the Elysian Fields, and all of the good ones are in Tartarus.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen is amused by the fact that Xena wants to help fix things, and he agrees to give her a ride to the other side just so that he can watch her fail and have some fun.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Time for a little lecture.
Time for a little lecture, because, like, I was not that interested in the episode itself, but, like, this whole thing sounded a little fishy to me. So... Mm. This time, I actually consulted a religious studies doctor who literally was drinking tea in the other room, because I happen to live with one. I have two partners. One of my partners is a religious studies doctor. So, first of all, according to ancient Greek mythology, there were no dead souls in Tartarus.
Huh.
Da-da-da-da. because it was a place where the gods kept the monsters and the titans that they imprisoned. So there were no human souls there. So all of the mortal souls actually were kept in Hades. And like, yeah, Hades is a god, but like there was a place called Hades that was like this idea of hell slash the underworld slash what happens after you die. Furthermore, there was a concept of Elysian Fields, like the Elysium, the thing that it's called Elysian Fields here. But one, it was a much later concept. And two, the fact that you were a good guy on Earth during your life had nothing to do with ending up in Elysian Fields.
Oh!
There was no concept of like your moral or immoral behavior during your life plays anything in your afterlife.
Yeah.
Because this concept is very Christian.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So basically, the gods in ancient Greece didn't give two shits about whether you were moral or not. It was all about being a Nepo baby. So if you were if you were a hero, aka you had God's blood running through your veins, then you would end up in Elysium. And all the other souls went to Hades and they had their memories stripped from them. And
that's,
yeah, so it's a very dark concept, but like, as I said, just a little lecture and just a little reminder that everything that is going on in this episode is one big Christian anachronism. But Charon is a cool character.
Yeah. No, that's very fair. I did have some doubts while watching this episode about how mythically correct any of that was, but definitely not all of this. So thank you. Thank you for the primer.
Thank you, Kostya. We'll come to you again.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So Xena gets out on the other side of the river, and it's an empty cave of some sorts that she's in with a bunch of children walking around aimlessly and bored. For some reason, Marcus is also hanging out at this cave. And Xena hugs him and tells him that she's been thinking about him a lot. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I know. Whenever a living being thinks about us, we can hear it. And Xena makes a slightly awkward face, indicating that, yes, he must have heard the jerking off thoughts as well. So Marcus tells her that it's okay. He was into it. Then we find out that the empty cave is Tartarus.
Torturous.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really look bad. Like, if we're going full on with this Christian understanding of the underworld, it's supposed to be hell, right? And it's not. It doesn't look bad. It just looks empty and boring.
Yeah. It was kind of a midway between full-on hell and something that kind of resembles the underworld in ancient Greek myths.
Yeah. So Marcus explains that the guy to blame for this whole debacle in the underworld is Atamenius, an ancient Greek serial killer. I mean, honestly, a serial killer as a villain is exactly the kind of trite bullshit I expected from a heterosexuality episode. So, yeah. Fair. It appears that Atamenius managed to steal Hades' helmet of invisibility.
Bop, bop, bow. Another MacGuffin.
Oh my god. Yeah, and it just, the phrase, helmet of invisibility, sounds so, like, cheap superhero movie esque, but like Marcus literally refers to it as a helmet of invisibility. I don't know, like call it something like his
Helmet of Power, like, would suffice.
Helmet of Power, like, I don't know, fucking Obsidian Helmet something. Like, but Helmet of Invisibility is just, like, so clearly, like, the item and what it does. You know? My problem with that is that it just, it seems like this is a horrible thing that's happening, that people have been switched. Like, the baddies are in the good place and the good ones are in the bad place. But they needed to make Tartarus look bad. I mean, one thing they could have done to make it bad is just if they forced everyone in Tartarus to watch this episode.
too cruel.
Yeah, I suppose. Marcus says that Adamantius is probably in the Elysian Fields, so they go there.
Yeah, he says he likes the pleasures of the Elysian Fields, which makes me think that the good souls are just regularly having orgies in the Elysian Fields and he kind of wants in.
Yeah, you wish.
Yeah.
No, we're going to see what the good souls do in Elysian Fields, and the answer is fuck all. Like, everyone is pretty much just as bored at the end when everything is saved in the Elysian Fields as they were in Tartarus. Like, everything is the same.
Great. The stakes are really high in this episode, as you can see.
Indeed. So it turns out that Elysian Fields are just New Zealand.
Yeah, but we are shown the waterfalls and the fields and the mountains, and while we pan through the scenery, basically, we hear this very cliche angelic music, like, ah! And then we see, like, the clouds part and the sun, like, again, like, you couldn't make it more, like, traditional Christian heaven if you tried.
Yeah. But in all of this paradise, we see a bunch of baddies kind of just messily punching each other around. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It doesn't look like intense violence. It just, you know.
Again, they're bored. They're like, I have nothing to do, so I'm going to punch you. And I'm going to punch you.
What yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And look who else is there. It's our buddy Toxius from episode 9, Death in Chains.
I love his name.
It's good. It's good. It's really good. He seems pretty cheerful and pleased that Xena ended up with the baddies after all. And Xena asks Toxius where Atomenius is, but he doesn't know.
Okay, since we mentioned Toxius and we remembered Death in Chains, and since I have nothing to add to describing the plot of this episode, here goes another lecture. As well as not giving a fuck if you were good in your living days on Earth. The gods didn't give a fuck if you were bad. So, actually, there are only a handful of people who were punished by the gods, and usually it's for deceiving the gods.
Mm.
And one of them, the most famous one, is Sisyphus, like, we all know it.
Yeah.
And remember, like, we couldn't figure out what it was that he did, how he came back from the dead.
Yes.
So, the story goes like this. Sisyphus asked his wife not to perform any funeral rituals over his body, and that was unusual. And then, like, the stupid part of the story goes, like, Hades was like, oh, that's unusual. Sisyphus, the dead Sisyphus, he called dead Sisyphus over to himself, and he's like, Sisyphus, do you know what's going on? And Sisyphus like, I don't, but I can find out if you send me back to Earth. And Hades
Ooh.
Like, sure. So he sent him back, and Sisyphus, of course, was there longer than Hades expected.
Yeah.
And that's why Hades was pissed off, and he made Sisyphus roll this giant rock up the hill for all eternity, like one of the cruelest punishments from the gods that we know from ancient Greek myths.
Yeah, well, I mean, according to Camus, he was actually into it.
Yeah, that so. Comes a little later.
Yeah, thank you.
Just thought that we all should know that.
No, it is cool. It is cool. I mean, if we're gonna take anything good from this episode, we're gonna kind of dig deep, which is exactly what we're doing.
At this point, Xena figures out that Marcus must have been put in the baddie pile when he died. So that also means that if she succeeds in restoring the correct order of things, Marcus would be put back in Tartarus for all eternity, together with the people he's about to betray. And Marcus is like, yeah, well, tough titties. You would have done the same.
And she grabs him by the vest, and she's like, why are you doing this, Marcus? And, like, usually I have, like, zero notes for Lucy Lawless. She's an amazing actress, but the writing in this episode is so bad that not even she can save the scene.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was so painful. But honestly, the reason I didn't mention it because I was like, I don't want to remember that this happened. So we then see some baddies get beat up by an invisible man. And soon after, the man appears and we get to see Adominius. And let me say, Adominius looks great. Like, he looks kind of like this middle-aged, old-school metal band member, but with short hair, but he gives off this, like,
yeah,
metal band vibe. I kind of wish they made Karen look kind of more like that, you know, instead of slapping that grotesque mask on him. Mm. And the actor is, like, genuinely good-looking. It kind of reminds me of Daniel Day-Lewis a bit.
Yeah, yeah, he has that. But also, apart from the fact that, like, he looks great and the actor is great, the way that they wrote him, it's like this typical evil laughing villain. Like, he clearly did not read the things I'll do when I become an evil overlord list, and he clearly didn't know that evil laughter leads to your demise eventually. Like, it's the first thing that he does. Like, he's like, ha, ha, ha. And we're like, okay, you're the baddie of the episode. Cool, cool, cool. Sure.
I mean, we knew that he was the baddie of the episode.
We knew that he was the baddie of the episode. It's just like, it's like, what's the most obvious choice that the baddie of the episode can do while once we see him? Like,
yeah.
Evil laughter.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So for some reason, Adominius has this spidey sense that tells him that there's a living being among them. I don't know how he can know that, and everyone else doesn't know that, but whatever, it's just brushed aside. He can, like, smell that it's Xena somehow.
He's like, there's a mortal among us.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay. but Xena plays it really cool. Mm-hmm. She kind of flips it around and she invites people to go ahead and try to kill her if they want. But she assures them it will all be for nothing. Also really hot. And Xena redirects the focus back on Adominius, saying that he just wants her out because she's been asking uncomfortable questions. Mm-hmm. So she asks why it is that Adominius is the one that gets to keep the helmet, and the rest of the baddies are like, huh. And then everyone starts fighting. I don't know why everyone starts fighting, because some people fight Xena because I guess they believe that she's alive. Toxius fights Adominius because he wants the helmet. And the rest fights each other just cause. So Adominius wins his fight, beheads Toxius, and puts his helmet of invisibility back on. And super weirdly, after that, he doesn't immediately go and kill Xena, because that would be super easy at that point with the invisibility thing. But he doesn't. So Xena and Marcus just decide that they want a break and they just leave unimpeded. And it's super weird.
Yeah, well, again, Adominius hasn't read the Evil Overlord's handbook, so he clearly doesn't understand that you have to kill your enemies while you can immediately.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Gabrielle is sitting bored by the lake. There's so many bored people in this episode. When some cheerful villagers with very strong Kiwi accents ask her whether she's coming to the festival. And she says no. And they say bye. An incredible scene. 10 out of 10.
You know, like when you're writing a script, like the first thing they tell you, like that you have to cut out anything that is unnecessary. Yeah, the script writers for this episode, they did not know that. They're just like, let's insert this scene for no reason. And I understand that they are setting up the festival that, like, later on we're gonna see it again. But, like, it was absolutely unnecessary. So they're like, just, oh, I wonder what our audience think Gabrielle is doing. Let's show that Gabrielle is still sitting there. Is she doing something? No. She's still sitting there. Let's show that. Sure. Yeah, let's do it. Of course.
So back in Tartarus, Xena decides to go see Hades, which won't be easy because Atmanius has unusually tough guards stationed at the entrance to this ugly-ass cheap... And it turns out that the unusually tough guards are these ugly-ass cheap CGI harpies. We're firmly in the Prometheus territory in terms of how bad all of this looks.
Yeah, and it's weird because a couple of episodes ago we saw that the CGI improved a lot, but
yeah,
those attempts really just look sad. I don't know. I wanted to say that they tried, but they did not try.
No, I don't know. I mean, no, I think generally these days it's common that there's a lot of bad CGI. We started with bad CGI. We had this like brief moment of really good CGI, and now we're back in the land of bad CGI. And something that people are totally fair to mention in this context, that one of the reasons that CGI is bad now, it's not the technology, it's the fact that people working on it are ridiculously overworked. They are ridiculously underpaid. It's really impossible to do good work in these circumstances that those people are put in. And maybe that was the case back then. Like, I don't want to be mean if that's kind of the situation that they were dealing with. But it just looks horrible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it does.
So Xena does her fire breathing thing to kill one harpy. And she does that because she picked up a flask earlier in this episode. That's why she had the alcohol or whatever. And the second harpy almost manages to take Marcus away, but Xena helps him get out. So the harpy only grabs Marcus's top, leaving him shirtless.
Which is a good thing.
Yes. Nobody's mad at that. At least we get to look at his hunky, well-moisturized body. Why not? And unfortunately, that doesn't last long because the harpy drops the top and Marcus just puts it back on.
Wah-wah.
But while she can, Xena kind of ogles Marcus's body, understandably, and notes that he's lost some weight. How's that possible? How is that possible? I don't get how death works in this universe.
I guess the screenwriters don't get it either. Nobody gets it at this point. They're just confused.
Anyway, Xena and Marcus get to Hades' chambers, where he's just hanging out, feeling sorry for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Hades is looking a lot better than the first time we saw him a few episodes ago, I would say. So if Atamanius was in a metal band, Hades is giving more emo band member.
Yeah.
He is wearing this lush red robe, black leather gloves, and what feels like dark eye makeup, but actually I think it's more gray, but it gives that kind of a vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So Xena chews Hades out for not doing anything to fix the situation. And he says that without his helmet of invisibility, he's almost powerless, which I have a few issues with this.
Sure.
First of all, how is the power of the god of the underworld concentrated in an invisibility MacGuffin. Like, what do death management and invisibility even have in common?
Yeah.
Second, this is the second death deity we've seen who's useless without their MacGuffin. First, it was his sister, whatever her name was, with her candle.
Celeste, I think.
Or Celestia, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
With her candle. Now it's Hades with his helmet of invisibility. Which is just a bit pathetic. Like, the death deities should really step their pussies up.
Yeah, it's a shame, since, like, again, coming back to ancient Greek mythology, Hades is one of the bigger players. Like, he is a brother to Zeus and Poseidon, and those are the three strongest gods. So, yeah, that's a bit of a shame. But I still like the actor. Like, now you can understand why I had a crush on him. Like, the eye makeup and the bangs.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. So, apparently, Adamenius has a plan. I don't know when we found out about this plan, but he has this plan. He wants to go back to the land of the living. And usually when the dead do that, they're just ghosts who can't hurt anyone. But because of the helmet, Adamenius will become mortal again. Mm-hmm. So he will be able to actually kill people, which is what his whole trip back to the land of the living is all about. But that also means that he can't be killed. But because he has the helmet, killing him will just bring him back to the underworld with the helmet. So it's not really a disadvantage, it seems like. I don't know. Whatever. So Xena asks to be sent back to the land of the living to deal with the situation, together with Marcus. And Hades is like, girl, you're alive. You can leave at any point. But he's dead, so no can do. Mm-hmm. And then Xena opts for some reverse psychology and asks Hades whether the god of the underworld is really that pathetically weak. That he can't do this one thing. And this works. And Hades gives Marcus his life back, but only for 48 hours.
Sure. Cool. We see some more city. Yeah, we see a little city. We see a little bit more of the shitty CGI, because there's like a blue light lighting up in Marcus's chest, and that means that Hades brought him back to life or whatever. We're very excited about this episode, can't you tell? Aren't you enjoying this ride with us? We certainly are. It's so great to have a heterosexuality episode, and this kind of heterosexuality episode, like, with the stakes and the plot and the writing. So great.
Meanwhile, Adamenius makes it out to the world of the living through the lake, and he sees Gabrielle. So he decides he can start his killing rampage with her. He is initially invisible, but he takes his helmet off so that he can see the fear in his victim's eyes as he prepares to kill. So that they see him, they get afraid, he gets to see the fear. And Gabrielle defends herself with her staff for a little bit. But of course, pretty quickly, Adamenius defeats her and he's about to kill her. And then he's about to kill her. And thankfully he's about to kill her for probably like 5 minutes, because there's time for Xena and Marcus, while he's about to kill her, to get out of the lake, look around, notice that he's about to kill her, and, you know, run and do something.
Mm-hmm.
So Adamenius looks up at them, and he's got blood around his nose and mouth. And Xena charges at him, but he puts his helmet on and becomes invisible. Except, it's a beach. They're on sand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Xena can see where he is anyway. But still, for some reason, she and Marcus keep swinging and missing. Like, it's unclear why. If you can see where he is, they can't, like, two against one get him, but they can't. So Adaminius manages to run away, and Marcus goes after him, while Xena checks on Gabrielle, who's entirely unharmed because Adaminius spent too much time being about to kill her. And also Gabrielle is quite pleased with the nosebleed she managed to give him, which is why he had that blood on his face. And Gabrielle is like, "He hit me in the head, and the next thing I saw was you. And wow, you look hot."
Aww.
I mean, not quite in so many words, but that's very definitely what she says. Like,
it's such a pleasant sight to see you.
Yeah, it's so cute.
Aww.
So it seems like Gabrielle has realized that she's going to have to do more to keep Xena away from the claws of heterosexuality.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah. Anyway, Marcus appears, says that Adaminius got away.
Yeah, and we see Gabby looking at Marcus, and she's like, "Hi, I've heard so much about you." And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I kind of hear a teeny bit of passive aggression in her voice. It's more like, "Hey, thanks for stealing my girlfriend. By the way, aren't you dead?"
Yeah, it is a bit bad. So the group follows the tracks for a bit, trying to catch Adaminius, but again, for reasons that are unclear, they can't. And they decide to make camp and sleep because it's getting dark. And Gabrielle is like, "What the fuck? How can we sleep while he's out there?" But Xena says that in the night, they're kind of on the same footing since they can't see each other. And the daylight is when the invisibility thing is a real advantage, so they should be good. Which, I guess? Maybe?
We all know why we needed that scene.
Yeah. So Gabrielle quickly falls asleep, and Xena and Marcus talk about what Marcus has been missing about the real world, and how it's not Xena's fault that he got killed. And Xena tells Marcus that she loves him, and they fuck.
Ew.
Yep.
Yeah, I can imagine Gabby tossing and turning next to those bushes they went into to fuck, because they're not really far away.
No, they're not.
All right, you motherfucker. I'll wait until you're dead again.
So the next morning, the group runs into the cheerful Kiwis that we saw earlier. And they were clearly attacked by Adaminius. So we find out that the festival that they were heading towards was a wedding. And it's established a bit earlier that Adaminius has a thing for brides-to-be. So the group immediately concludes that he will be going there. And indeed, they're correct, because we see Adaminius kind of low-key beating up a few people at the village. So yes, he's there. Our heroes get to the village and ask the father of the bride to let Xena take the place of the bride during the ceremonial bathing, since that's when Adaminius tends to kill the bride. Mm-hmm. He's done it a few times.
Yeah, ceremonial bathing just seems like porn plot thing.
Yeah, I mean it looks great when they show it. Like, I was like, I want to do a ceremonial bathing.
I don't want to be a bride, but I want to do the bathing.
No, but the bathing, sign me up.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's a bit weird because it's unclear why the group doesn't consider the possibility that Adaminius is already there and he can hear them as they say those things. And indeed, we see right after the scene that the door of the house opens and closes by itself. So I guess he was indeed there listening to them.
Listening in, yeah.
Yeah. So that night, while Xena is living her ceremonial bathing fantasy, Adaminius sneaks into the house with the actual bride, or so we thought. It was a double bluff. Mm-hmm. So Xena knew that Adaminius would be listening after all. So she didn't replace the bride. She was at home. And so she fights Adaminius, who immediately puts the helmet on, and becomes invisible, but Xena has a secret tactic up her sleeve. She throws a blanket on him.
Amazing.
And immediately easily kills him, which is just, it's comically simple how this works. And
but of course, Hades and his harpies and Charon and everybody in the underworld, they were not able to do that. Only Xena could do that.
So, okay, whatever. So Xena takes the helmet and leaves to find Marcus. The next day in the morning, Xena and Marcus are at the lake, and Marcus is having some doubts, but ultimately decides to do the right thing and return the helmet to Hades. So Xena and Marcus encounter Charon again, who's cranky as hell again, but agrees to take them across to the other side once they show him the helmet.
Yeah, it's the best, one of the best scenes of the episode, like a for second sure. best scene of the episode, because Charon, when he sees the helmet, he kind of starts acting like this cranky but professional flight attendant slash bus tour guy. He's like, now, if you look to the left, you'll see the Cave of Despair. It's really cute.
yeah, it's really nice. So our heroes need to give the helmet back to Hades, and they go back to the ugly-ass cheap CGI palace, and Marcus gets attacked by the ugly-ass cheap CGI harpy, who throws him over the bridge, leaving him holding on for dear life? I mean, like, what are the stakes here? If he falls, I guess he dies, but he's about to die anyway, because his 48 hours are almost up. It's unclear why we should care. Not just because it's a character we don't give a shit about, but because the plot also doesn't make sense.
Great combination.
Yeah. And so Xena saves him, risking her own life, which is at stake, for basically no reason.
Yeah, also we need to see the cheap-ass ugly harpies for the second time. Ugliest cheap CGI harpies for the second time in like 15 minutes. Then again, it's pointless, but it's okay. The episode is almost over, so brace yourselves.
So Xena gets to Hades alone, mm-hmm. and she tells him that she hid the helmet. And she will only tell him where it is if he agrees to put Marcus amongst the good. And Hades says it's impossible, because everyone is only judged once when they die. And Xena is like, oh, perfect! Because Marcus is about to die again, so give him another hearing then. And Hades whines about it, but agrees. Then we find out that the helmet was in the room all along, with Marcus wearing it. Which, fine, like, that is kind of cute. So Hades tells Marcus that his time is up. So Xena kisses Marcus and then stabs him. I thought he was gonna die anyway, just kind of on his own. I don't know. It's really unclear what that was for.
Dramatic effect, I guess.
Sure. Anyway, Xena again pleads with Hades to put Marcus in the Elysian Fields, and of course it works.
Yeah, like, again, this the writing in this episode is very weird. Like, Xena gives this speech about Marcus and then says to Hades, look into his heart. And Hades kind of literally glances down, because I assume that Marcus is lying somewhere on the floor. So maybe Hades is like, well, his heart, what? Like, should I look at his heart or his liver? Like, be specific.
So Xena says goodbye to Marcus and reemerges from the lake to Gabrielle. And she says that Marcus will forever be in her heart. And at this point, we, the audience, are finally given the sweet release of death. I mean, the end of this episode.
Yeah, but before, like, at the end of the episode, Xena kind of beats her chest while she's saying things about Marcus. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just relieved that it's over and like we can get off the heterosexuality right. Thanks. It was
bad.
A blast. No.
Yeah. Yeah, and we get the funny credits for this episode, and they say no winged harpies were harmed or set to a fiery grave during the production of this motion picture.
Maybe they should have.
Okay, so this is going to be a tough one. But what was the gayest moment of this episode?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, I have one, actually.
Yeah.
I think the dynamic between Toxius and Adaminius when they're fighting.
Ooh.
And, like, remember there's a scene, like, we did not talk about it, but, like, there's a scene where, like, Adaminius makes Toxius get on his knees beside him, and he's like, well, you were like a leader in your own little world, but here you're my slave.
Mm.
And that's kind of hot, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely some kinky shit. I'll give you that. Yeah. I'm gonna go for the more straightforward gay moment of Gabrielle waking up after being hit on the head and being like, oh my god, Xena, so hot. Which brings us to the final question. How many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
A 1.
Same.
And my justification being, like, it could have been a 0, but Charon and Hades' bangs combined give that 1 point. Because before, the lowest ranking episode was
2
with the baby ping pong.
Yeah, Cradle of Hope.
But the baby ping pong was at least entertaining.
It was really stupid, but at least it was entertaining, yeah.
Yeah, here it's like, you heard us struggle through this episode. Like, it was hard to retell it, and like, it's a 1.
It is a 1. Well, but now we've done it, and we never have to do it again.
Yay!
which is good news for all of us.
I mean, it's a shame to hate on Xena Warrior Princess. Like, we love the show, clearly.
We really do. We want it to be better than this. And we know it can be, which is why we're a bit harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a silver lining in the next episode. We know it.
Yes. Yes. So we've gotten through this. And that means that we will be rewarded next time when we talk about episode 17. The Royal Couple of Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
Aw, you look so happy.
I am. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, I know.
Okay, thanks for listening. All right.
Yes, while you're waiting for the next episode, please do check out our Instagram. It's at Xena Made Me Gay. Very straightforward, but not straightforward, if you know. Sorry about that. I hated it already when I started saying it, and I was like, well, it's happening now. Which is kind of how this episode made me feel, so I guess it's fair.
Yeah, and it's a good place to end, I think.
Indeed. The sweet release of death comes for us all. Thank you.
Great.
And
on that optimistic note, bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.